coincidence or something else, it didn't really matter. Raylith was clearly confident in what he was saying. He didn't want to give himself up like this, but what choice did he have? "Good enough," he said heavily, getting to his feet and gesturing to the stairwell. "Lead the way." Chapter 12. Weir sprinted through the trees, dodging low-hanging branches and leaping over fallen logs, even as he tried desperately to calculate where each of his squads should currently be. A little ahead there was a flicker of movement as Aaron appeared, the young man glancing back at Weir and giving a cheerful salute before vanishing again. It had been to let him know that he was still there more than anything else. The Augur wasn't allowed to help him here, much to Weir's chagrin. He would have given anything for the ability to move that quickly. "Amadia!" he gasped as he skidded to a halt, ignoring the slight pulling pain from his scarred stomach, finally reaching the edge of the cliff overlooking the forest below. Enemy reds were visible at various points through the gaps in the trees, as were the whites of his own troops. Heavily outnumbered, as always. "Tell Ciara that your squad needs to move a half mile to the south. Right now." He spotted a trio of figures sliding through the trees closer to his position. "Tell her Calder scouts are there too, but that they will be past by the time you get there. You should have," he calculated quickly, 10 minutes to set up an ambush on the lower road. He won't know you're there until it's too late." He put his hands on his knees, catching his breath as he examined the tableau, nodding to himself as the flashes of white to the north started toward him at a good pace. He gave more orders as he spotted the courses of other squads through the thick foliage, though most were only minor adjustments. His people were very close to where he had envisaged them. "You're winning." Weir flinched, turning to see Aaron to his left now, the young augur peering with keen interest at the events unfolding below. "We're not losing." Weir's gaze traveled to the slopes beyond Aaron, and he spotted a couple of Calder's men making their way up. "Make sure you're not seen. If you get me caught, I'm going to look even worse than usual." The scouts were searching specifically for him, he knew, albeit more as a precaution than from any real belief that he would actually be here. Calder was a proponent of generals staying well out of the range of battle, and that attitude pervaded his ranks. To them, Weir's being present so close to the conflict would be foolhardy.
"I'm being careful."
Aaron reluctantly sank lower as he said the words, though, making sure plenty of foliage sat between him and the enemy soldiers.
"Just thought you might want to take a break and let me know what happened in Prythe," he added, sounding somewhat disgruntled.
Weir glanced away from the scene, forcing a grin to hide his discomfort at the reminder of what he and Tayrus had learned.
"Working with the Council's been boring these past few days, I take it?" "You have no idea."
Aaron grinned back, though. Weir looked again toward Calder's scouts. They were still a distance away, but they clearly knew this area was a good view of the battlefield.
"I don't suppose you want to make us invisible, seeing as you're here?"
Aaron snorted.
"I said I wanted to talk, not help you cheat."
Shouts came from below, followed by the sounds of a clash. Wooden weapons rather than steel, but still loud enough to cause a flock of birds to rise from their resting place. The scouts heard it too, sprinting back in the direction from which they'd come. Aaron peered down at the battle unfolding.
"Not that you need it, apparently. You are getting better at this."
He sounded mildly surprised.
"Thanks," said Weir dryly.
He settled back against a thick trunk. He needed to stay vigilant, but it seemed that his gamble had paid off. He glanced across at Aaron.
"Do we have to do this right now? We could just use your ability to communicate privately later."
It was going to be a heavy conversation, one that he didn't particularly want to have while distracted. Aaron grunted.
"I saw Tayrus this morning," he admitted. "He didn't say much. He was on his way to meet with the Council, but... I got the impression that things did not go entirely well."
He shrugged.
"I'd prefer to hear the bad news now than have to wait for it."
Weir sighed, but nodded.
He spent a grim few minutes sporadically relating the things he had learned on his sojourn south, occasionally pausing to issue orders or assess how a clash was going. "Fates," murmured Aaron after Weir had finished. He raked a hand through his hair, the fighting below completely forgotten.
"Fates! The entire city? And Jen thinks it happens close to the festival? So, any time from now?"
A cracking note of panic entered his voice at that, though he quickly brought it under control.
"That scum Rowan claimed that he'd seen us getting annihilated, too. He was so unhinged we thought he must have been talking about the Banes that got through a year ago. But now... Fates! I can't comprehend it. I can't comprehend it. And I at least know what's still out there somewhere. How are we supposed to convince everyone else?"
Weir watched as flashes of white darted through the trees toward another clash. The men he had diverted would arrive at the skirmish just in time.
"Our options are limited," he conceded, recognizing the dread in Aaron's tone all too well.
He'd had the whole day before to think about this on the road back from Darintel, to argue over the options with Terrace, and there were no easy solutions. Both agreed that preparing the city for an evacuation would be the right course, but they couldn't simply go around announcing what they'd learned. Everyone would rightly demand proof, and if they admitted where the information had come from, then the source would inevitably be discounted as unreliable, not to mention overshadowed by the equally inevitable uproar over Weir's actions.
"What about if Michelle and I both see something?" suggested Aaron.
"You mean see something?" said Weir wryly.
"Already considered it. You haven't had a confirmed vision since the two of you were officially recognized, and that was, what, almost a year ago?"
He shot Aaron an apologetic look. "Even if you could fool Selyse into announcing it, and you know her loyalty is to administration more than to her position as scribe, so there will be no convincing her just to go along with it. The Assembly doesn't have enough confidence in you to simply believe something that big. You would need to have established a record of being consistently right before throwing that at them." Aaron raised an eyebrow in vague surprise, and Weir shrugged back, shifting his position so that he could observe the progress of a battle farther to the north.
"If I've learned one thing over the past year, it's that the law is important, but hardly the same thing as what's right," he said grimly. "This is about saving lives. If I thought that you two cheating the system was the best option, I'd take the risk. I still might have been tempted if Michelle was more reliable," he added absently.
"She's reliable."
Aaron's voice was sharp. He immediately waved a hand apologetically.
"I know what she was like the last time you saw her, but... she's fine, as long as she stays within the walls of the toll."
Neither man talked for a few seconds, and then Weir scrambled to his feet.
"I need a better view," he said, quickly checking that the general's scouts hadn't returned.
He jogged along the edge of the cliff, keeping just inside the tree line to avoid the off chance of being spotted from below until he found a suitable position. Aaron trailed after him, not bothering to step outside of time, keeping pace easily enough. The auger was there ostensibly as an observer, making certain that Weir did nothing to abuse the official oath stone he currently held. Normally, he would be accompanied by both a gifted and an administrator while in possession of it, but today's exercise called for a level of independence that Weir had, with great reluctance, been granted. They were soon settled down again, Weir making more adjustments. He gave the commands confidently now, not pausing too long or second-guessing himself as he once had. Assessing the state of the fight was important, but swift, decisive orders were equally so. Eventually, though, he fell silent, just watching.
"So how are we going to deal with it?" asked Aaron
softly, continuing their conversation from earlier. Weir didn't take his eyes from the field.
"We've been through all the options, believe me. Fates, we even discussed using a combination of my oathstone and control to force enough people in power to do something. But the moment we do that, rather than just telling the truth, we're no better than Tol Shen, no matter our motivations."
He shook his head.
"Which leads us to the obvious option."
Aaron frowned, Then his eyes widened, and he shook his head.
No, no! Out of the question! You tell the truth about how you found out, and you're handing the country to Tol Shun regardless of whether the attack happens this year.
Aaron's tone was firm, almost commanding.
You would be arrested. Don't have any doubt about that. If you weren't, the entire committee would come off as a complete sham, and your family would lose all the political capital you've worked so hard for over the past year. There would be calls for your uncle to abdicate and let another of the great houses take the throne. This awfully loose alliance of administration and gifted would fall apart. The army's only advantage against the blind and Desriel, and fates knows whatever else is coming, would be gone. The South would be...
You don't have to convince me. I get it. Weir couldn't keep the bitterness from his tone. He'd reluctantly come to the same conclusion, albeit only after a long argument on the journey back.
Tavris said the same thing. It's not just me who pays in that scenario. It's the country.
Precisely.
Aaron sounded bleakly confident in his affirmation. Tol Shun might see us as far as the old augur's visions allowed them to, but they still don't understand or even really believe in the threat from the north. They think they see an opportunity to rule. They won't be able to resist tearing down anything in their path to that. They will consolidate themselves in the south, maybe even figure out a way to hold off Nesk and Desriel. But they won't be able to stop what's coming.
Will we? Asked Weir quietly. We're going to try. That's better than the alternative.
Weir sighed, agreeing. These were discussions he had already had, though part of him constantly wanted to revisit them, to try and find some angle he had missed.
One thing I would ask you to do, not that it's anywhere near as effective as I'd like, given how little time we have, is to start some rumors, he said. You spent years monitoring the city for information. You know how news flows around here better than anyone. Maybe even use some light control on the more influential people to make sure they're convinced.
Aaron looked thoughtful.
It's probably a better plan than you think, he admitted. The right people start talking about this, and most of the city will know within days. Rumors might be enough to get at least some to leave straight away, and I guarantee the rest will be packed and ready for an evacuation. Nobody's going to take chances after the blind.
Weir exhaled. That was good to hear.
I am going to run this by Uncle, he added, holding up a hand as Aaron made to protest again. Fates, Aaron, I know. It will make him complicit if he doesn't turn me in. But there are no good options, and he is the king. If nothing else, he needs to know the danger to his people. For following years, if not this one.
Aaron grimaced, but eventually indicated his agreement.
He can better move things in the background so that the city's prepared for an evacuation, similar to what we did when we learned of the blind. And he always was willing to listen to you.
His tone held a nostalgic twang, gone again immediately, but noticeable nonetheless. Aaron looked at Weir sheepishly.
Sorry.
Weir glanced at the augur, but said nothing. A strange mix of discomfort and affection washing over him as he saw the oddly familiar expression on Aaron's face, this one no doubt unbeknownst to the other man. They hadn't spoken of Aaron's relationship to Weir's father at first. There had been the constant dangers of the road back to Elin Ilan and then the chaos of their arrival to deal with. But Aaron had all but admitted it back at the boundary when Galadra had accused him. And the time Weir had spent with him on the road had only confirmed it. Aaron had been the one controlling his father. He'd wrestled with that knowledge for many long nights. Part of him had been angry with Aaron. Part of him was still angry, deep down. Part of him knew that the augur had saved his life 100 times over, too. Weir turned his attention back to the forest below. It had been Aaron who had come to him in the end, one cold night a few months after their return, when things had finally started to settle down. He'd been quiet at first, moving through the words as though he'd rehearsed them over and over, explaining in careful terms why he had taken the actions he had. Then he'd broken down in tears, as if the weight of everything he'd done, everything he'd been through, was finally hitting him. They'd talked for hours that night, and many nights thereafter,
ultimately reaching an uneasy agreement that had gradually become a genuine, if still sometimes equally uneasy, friendship. The more Weir looked, the more he saw of the father he'd known in Aaron, and not just in the young man's outward mannerisms, but in his process, in the way he thought about things and saw the world. It was a bittersweet relationship, one in which Weir constantly found himself catching glimpses of his father, and then second-guessing whether it had ever been his father in the first place. Aaron had assured him that Elosian had loved him, even as he'd admitted that the man's hatred of the gifted sometimes overwhelmed everything else. And when Weir had told him about Elosian's journal from 20 years ago, Aaron had confirmed much of the information it held, the missing memories, and the abrupt, irrational hatred of the gifted that followed. Neither Elosian nor Aaron had ever considered that one of the augurs might have altered Elosian's mind to make him feel that way. There was no logical reason for him to think it would have happened, after all. But as soon as the possibility had been raised, Aaron had started nodding. And once the young augur had really thought about it, he conceded that he could recognize the signs, too.
"I think you're done,"
Weir started, shaken from his thoughts by Aaron's voice. The augur was right. The sounds of battle below had faded, and from the confident stride of his white-clothed troops as they emerged into the open, grassy plains that stretched out toward Fedris Idri, they had done well.
"I think you're right."
He stood, stretching, then unhooked the oathstone from around his neck and handed it to Aaron.
"All yours."
They made their way down the slope carefully, not bothering to conceal their presence now. A few of the white-clad soldiers spotted Weir and threw him friendly, cheerful salutes. His squads were made up of mainly younger soldiers, and though plenty of them had grumbled against him at the beginning, their mounting victories were starting to thaw the ice. The red-clad soldiers, on the other hand, either ignored him or cast black looks in his direction. They had been defeated before, but this was the first time Weir's success had been so resounding. Weir shaded his eyes against the near midday sun as they walked, finally spotting two men standing a little apart, arms crossed and engaged in a quiet but clearly intense debate.
"Don't have to guess what they're arguing about," murmured Aaron.
He gave Weir a deep nod, a respectful gesture that meant a lot in front of the soldiers.
"Highness, I'll speak with you later."
Weir smiled slightly at him in dismissal, then squared his shoulders, marching over to where the older men were talking animatedly.
"General Viss, General Calder," said Weir politely as he approached.
"Sire."
General Viss, a lean man in his 60s with steel in his hair and a soldier's hardness to his weathered face, gave him a deferential nod, casting a glance behind Weir up to the area from which he had just come.
"Congratulations are in order." "Let's not go that far."
General Calder's face, as far as Weir had ever been able to tell, was permanently set in a scowl. He was younger than Viss by a decade, and clearly still kept up his training, muscles bulging beneath his neatly pressed uniform.
"His forces, significantly smaller though they were, defeated ours," said General Viss calmly. "He made good, dare I say even clever, tactical decisions, something I would not have thought possible 6 months ago," he added, with a small smile in Weir's direction to show he meant no insult.
Weir smiled back, conceding the last point without protest. Though he had studied some light military strategy before leaving for Caladel, it wasn't an area any of his teachers at the school had been able to cover. It was fair to say that his training with the army had gone poorly in the beginning. Calder snorted.
"Good decisions? He took an enormous risk exposing himself like that," he said irritably.
"It paid off," observed Weir, managing to keep his own irritation from his tone.
Calder's reaction was far from a surprise. The man hated Weir almost as much as the administrators in Gifted did. Accustomed to it though he was, the attitude still grated.
"And if it hadn't, sire?"
The red-bearded general glared at Weir.
If my men had captured you, they could have forced you to tell your whole army to surrender, or at the least walk themselves into a trap of our own making.
Come now, General, said Viss, before Weir could respond. There are protocols upon protocols for such an event. Prince Torin could attempt to get rid of the Elfstone to avoid any of that, or simply issue an order containing the right passphrase to alert his men to his capture. He gambled. Sometimes gambling is needed on the battlefield. Let us simply be pleased at his progress.
Calder growled under his breath.
We will still need to review your decisions later, sire, he said to Weir, waiting until Weir indicated his acceptance before striding off to see to his troops.
Thanks, said Weir, once the general was out of earshot. Viss waved away Weir's gratitude absently.
He is right, you know, he said quietly. Contingencies are all well and good, but you didn't have any protection whatsoever. If you had been taken...
I know. Weir was all too aware of the risks, of how dangerous he could be to Andara's security if he was captured with an Oathstone and somehow turned. It was why his itinerary was kept such a tightly guarded secret, why the Oathstones were locked away in Tol Athian, and why, when one was released for any purpose, he was required to have the somewhat excessive protection of an augur present. The Shateth attack had only served to reinforce that he was a target. It had been only a week after his return when the remaining two of the creatures had appeared, mere moments after he had used essence. That he had been in the middle of Tol Athian with most of the council members in attendance, not to mention Aaron and Ishel, was likely the only reason he was not now either dead or prisoner of the Venerate. Even so, many gifted had died, and Aaron and Ishel had both suffered injuries in the attack, too. It had been a sudden, violent maelstrom of blood and death all within the space of a single minute. Weir still had nightmares about it. Even with the Shateth now imprisoned, he had heavily restricted himself from touching essence ever since. Viss clapped him on the back.
Still, you did well, sire.
Weir shook his head, the thrill of victory fading as he considered the practicality of his actions further.
Better than previously, anyway. I think I have a long way to go.
The general chuckled.
You put yourself at risk today because you needed information. Information you should be able to get from others if you have enough resources at your disposal. This isn't about turning you into some kind of military savant, sire. This is about using these small-scale skirmishes to make sure that you understand the fundamentals. Supply lines, rules of engagement, how fast a group can move based on their size and armor and experience. It is about making sure that you can assess the likely outcome of a clash based on your troops, the enemy, the terrain, and assess it fast enough to maneuver accordingly if we are not around to assist.
He gave Weir an encouraging nod.
You have a head for it now. General Calder is a sore loser, but that's what makes him right for the job. And it's why, for all his grumbling, he'll continue to support you in the assembly. As will I.
Weir breathed out, grateful for the reassurance. It hadn't taken the military long to recognize the potential of his ability. The advantages it provided was one of the main reasons he hadn't simply been pushed from most political circles. For all the discomfort his presence now caused, he was considered a vital weapon against Andara's foes, a necessary evil. It wasn't the most pleasant way to be regarded, but he supposed it was better than being ignored. They began walking back toward the gathered troops, Weir lost in thought.
"Why are we really here, General?" he asked eventually.
When Viss looked askance at him, he continued, "I agree that these exercises are important, but I only got back to the city late last night. Organizing one at such short notice suggests some urgency." The General hesitated.
"We have had some more reports over the past week, sire."
His gray eyes met Weir's.
I did think that speaking of them face to face might be more prudent than shuffling it in with all of your other paperwork.
Weir glowered despite himself. What Viss really meant was that he didn't want it to be so easy for Weir to ignore again. Viss was the military authority with whom Weir got along best. It had no doubt fallen to him to have this conversation.
Desriel?
Viss nodded dourly.
Every sign points to the Gilshar moving, massing their troops.
He took a breath.
And though the reports are less certain, there's movement in Nesk, too, I'm afraid.
Weir sighed, feeling as if he were being pulled in several directions at once. Desriel and Nesk were undoubtedly a concern, but they would both be coming from the south. From what Drass had said, it seemed unlikely that they would be responsible for the raising of Ilin Ilan.
And you want me to recall everyone still in the north?
Viss scratched his chin.
As many as we can without leaving it completely undefended, he admitted. Sire, I won't pretend to know what you went through up there, and fates know those creatures are horrific. But we have had our people scouring the countryside for months. It's possible they haven't killed them all, but if there are stragglers, we can always send men back.
His eyes searched Weir's, and Weir could see the concern in them. Weir rubbed his forehead. Viss was a good man, a good general. He could hardly be blamed for not putting all his faith in what Weir, Caroline, Aaron, and Ischel had reported. He had to balance the security of the country, from a threat with which he was familiar, against their word. While the stakes had been lower, he and everyone else had been content to mollify Weir and send men to roam the north, searching for the creatures that Weir knew had broken through the boundary a year ago. 2 months passed, though, the reports had started coming in from Desriel, particularly concerning signs of an increased presence across the border from Talmiel, which was the only viable crossing between the two countries. That was several weeks' march from the north, and Andara's army was currently scattered, a large number of units devoted to combing the countryside in search of the missing Banes. It would take time to inform them all of the change in plans, let alone gather them back into one place. The southern houses posed another problem. They had agreed to place their forces and resources at the king's command under certain circumstances, and Weir had no doubt that this would be one of them. As much as it stung, the army would be stronger and better supplied if they went south and took care of more immediate threats. Even General Viss and his counterparts, who usually liked to eschew politics, knew how important such a step would be to bridging the current divide in Andara. Another ploy of Tol Shen's, no doubt, abandoning the doomed north to strengthen the south. Weir gritted his teeth.
How reliable are the reports?
Quiet, the general drew in a breath. Sire, ever since the blind invaded, the Gilshar have been stronger than we are, even with the help of the gifted. And they know it. If they did attack and broke through at Talmiel, it would be a foothold which they would not easily be made to give up.
Weir chewed his lip.
What about Dylanus?
Viss shook his head.
Even if it weren't as dangerous as you've previously said, their religion won't allow it.
He crossed his arms.
As for the rumblings from Nesk, we both know that they've never been shy about their claim on the south, and we won't have much warning if they do try something. I'm sorry, sire, but I think there is consensus now. The troops need to be brought back.
Weir grimaced. He couldn't blame Viss, couldn't blame anyone, really, but the thought still left him with a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. The Banes that had breached the boundary had gone somewhere, and knowing what he now did about Ilin Ilan, he couldn't help but wonder if the missing creatures were going to be at least partly responsible for what had been seen.
I'm surprised you haven't asked my uncle, he said eventually.
We went to King Andras with this 3 days ago, Viss said candidly. He insisted that we get your agreement before proceeding.
Weir gave Kevran a mental note of gratitude. His uncle had been one of the few to steadfastly support his claims, backing Weir and Caroline against the advice of almost everyone else. It hadn't worked. Caroline, furiously frustrated at the Assembly's inability to see the danger, had volunteered to oversee the relief efforts in the North as a means of quietly conducting a search herself. But even so, Weir couldn't begin to say how much that faith had meant to him. He squeezed his eyes closed, letting the crisp morning air burn his lungs. He'd been considering this for a while anyway, though it made the decision no easier.
All right.
He opened his eyes to find Viss looking at him with an expression of incredulity and cautiously optimistic relief.
Really?
Yes.
Weir's heart was heavy in his chest, but he knew there was no choice. He didn't believe the rest of the Dargathan and Elatai had been eliminated, but Viss was right. There simply wasn't anywhere else to look. They needed to address the most pressing threats first. But I want the units stationed at Baradrin and Tar Annan to remain, and regular reports from every other area coming in weekly, he continued. If anything happens, I want as much warning as we can get. And I want word spread that everyone in those regions should be ready to evacuate south. Quickly, if need be.
Viss frowned slightly at the last part, but didn't comment on it.
Done.
His shoulders relaxed in evident relief.
It is the smart decision, sire.
I know.
Weir looked out over the sunlit plains.
I just hope it's the right one.
They talked for a little longer, and then Weir spoke briefly to some of his troops, congratulating them, making sure any minor injuries they had sustained were healed, and generally seeing to their morale, before wandering back over to where Aaron was waiting alongside their already saddled horses.
"Where to now for you?"
asked Aaron as they mounted.
"My uncle first. Then mostly catching up on paperwork and meetings for a few days, I suspect."
Weir turned his face toward the sun, which was nearly at its zenith now. This was probably the last chance he'd get to be outdoors today.
"And at some point, as soon as Tayris can make arrangements, Tol Athian,"
he added reluctantly, giving his steed's flank a nudge with his heel and rubbing the scar across his abdomen absently.
"He thinks it's time we had another chat with the Chattez."
Chapter 13 Asha used essence to dive, letting the armored tail of the Dargathan sail through the space where her head had just been as she funneled more energy into her legs, skidding across the courtyard. She screwed up her face in frustration, ripping up a section of stone and slamming it into the Bane's chest, using the incredible force of the blow to fling the black-scaled creature high into the air. Even as she did so, another three appeared to the side, and in the corner of her eye she could see the dozen or so Tekril still scuttling toward her from the trees. A shadow flickered over her face, and she knew there were several Elatai somewhere above, too. She split her focus, sending a maze of hot, thin beams of blazing red into the air. There was screeching from above, and bodies began falling around her. She had moved on before the first one hit, tearing more stone and flinging it at the oncoming Banes.
"Are you sure this is necessary?"
she shouted as she dodged to the side, barely avoiding several black spears as they skewered the ground where she had been standing. The only answer she received was more motion at the tree line below, two new creatures appearing. They were different from any of the others, though just as horrifying to look at. Humanoid figures with no eyes and gaping mouths filled with rows of long, thin teeth that glistened red. A new kind of Bane? They were more than 100 feet away. Besides, the Elatai remaining above were closing in fast. She ignored them. A moment later, a shadow loomed over her and pain burned through her arm. She let out a yell, panicked to find another of the creatures she had spotted with its mouth firmly clamped to her shoulder, teeth somehow penetrating the essence armor to reach her flesh. She funneled essence to the point and let it burst outward into the creature's head. There was no resistance. It exploded in a shower of viscera, but Asha's relief was short-lived as a second of the creatures raked its claws down her back, again cutting through her armor.
She screamed this time, twisting and unleashing a concentrated beam of essence that sliced through the monster's torso. She gasped, dancing to the side as she healed and her armor rapidly restored itself. Where had they come from? There was no sign of the two she had seen over in the trees, and yet they had been far too far away to have reached her so quickly. She rapidly finished off the few remaining banes, pain temporarily forgotten. She thought she understood why Ellie had chosen this method to train her now. Each attacker had strengths mirroring a con user's ability. Dargathan couldn't be hurt using essence, Elatai attacks could cut through an essence shield, and the Tekril were able to drain the essence from those they touched. The last Asha hadn't even realized when she had fought them in the real world, but there had been too many here to completely avoid contact. The sapping effect had never come close to emptying her reserve, but they were nonetheless enemies she couldn't ignore.
"Not entirely bad."
Asha turned, still panting, raising an eyebrow at Ellie as the other woman strode into view through the smoke.
"Not bad," she repeated, a touch piqued,
as she let her essence armor dissipate.
"You barely beat them, with all the power of the Lith at your disposal."
Ellie's tone indicated that she was less than impressed.
"They're only banes. Yes, they mimic some augur abilities, but aside from the Dargathan, they're still not much more than animals. Don't think that a victory here means that you could take on one of the Venerate."
Asha acknowledged the statement, rubbing her shoulder.
"What were those things at the end?" "Al'Goriat. You will never face one, but..."
Ellie shrugged.
"They were able to manipulate time."
"They actually hurt me," said Asha, her tone vaguely irritated.
The wound was gone now. Her essence healed her remarkably quickly, at least in this place. But her memory of the injury remained uncomfortably fresh.
"We learn from mistakes, not perfection."
Ellie eyed the torn cloth on her arm and shoulder.
"Be glad that we're in the Dokken. In real life, that would have left a scar that no amount of essence could fully heal."
Asha said nothing to that, continuing to rub absently at where the wound had been.
"So they account for the Venerate's time manipulation abilities?" she said eventually. "What about control?"
"You've kept the Dokken stable for an entire year. There's nothing wrong with your mental discipline. And Diara has already had the opportunity to try something anyway. Be alert with your shielding, but I don't think you need to be overly concerned, compared to the defenses you've already built up."
Asha nodded. What Ellie was saying rang true. Though Asha's curiosity had led her to read up on the augurs previously, she had spent much of the past few days learning as much about their abilities as she could. The library here was surprisingly full of information in that regard.
"For the most part, I think I can adjust to these attacks as I go," she said, mind already back on what she'd just faced. "But the time manipulation ability is tricky. How do I counter it?" "In a fight, the only counter to someone who can move faster than you is to be smarter than them, anticipate, and to some extent be lucky."
Ellie shook her head apologetically at Asha's grimace.
"There is simply no easy way to nullify their advantage. All you can do is look for predictability and overconfidence. Or better yet, get in a good first strike that ends the battle before it starts."
Asha sighed again, accepting Ellie's assessment.
"I would like to practice some more, just against the Al'Goriat for now."
Ellie frowned.
"You're sure you wish to push on?" she asked, clearly observing Asha's tiredness.
Asha waved away her concern.
"Start me off with one, and a blade."
Ellie made a face but nodded, stepping back. A sword materialized on the ground, which Asha stooped to pick up. A moment later, one of the monsters appeared, standing not more than 50 feet away. Asha let essence flood through her, every muscle tensed, watching the disgusting, eyeless creature closely. Essence didn't just increase her strength. It stimulated every sense, made everything clearer and brighter and sharper. If she could just focus... The Al'Goriat spotted her and vanished. Asha swung, hard and fast.
She hit fresh air, overbalancing as pain seared down her left side. The creature had swiped there with a razor-sharp claw, scoring a deep hit and drawing blood. Asha let out an involuntary cry and twisted, but the creature was already gone again. Another pain scraped down her back, and she groaned, stumbling and dropping the sword. She rolled desperately, the pain of the motion agonizing, only to find that the Elgoriat had been frozen in place by Ellie. She snatched up the sword again and scrambled to her feet, breathing easier as her injuries healed.
"I'd like to try again."
Ellie's mouth twisted, but she agreed, the Elgoriat vanishing and materializing back where it had started. Asha's pulse raced as she dropped into a ready stance, eyes locked on the creature, watching its breathing, its movements, the way its muscles tensed when needle-like teeth slicing into her left arm. She resisted the searing pain and unleashed a burst of essence connecting with the creature's shoulder, though it was far too late. The monster ripped itself free, taking a chunk of flesh with it in a shower of crimson blood. Asha gasped and went to her knees, head swimming as essence flooded to the wound. When she steadied herself, the creature had vanished once again.
"This is a fight you cannot win, Ashalia," said Ellie to the side.
Asha twisted to see the woman staring concernedly at her.
"The ability to manipulate time simply has no counter. You would be better served looking for other options."
Asha waited, letting her breathing calm, then rose to her feet.
"Again."
There had been something, that time, a flicker to her left in the breath before the Elgoriat had struck, something she would have dismissed at any other time as being her imagination.
"Ashalia, again," repeated Asha.
She had read enough about this ability to know that what she wanted to do wasn't impossible. The sheer volume of essence coursing through her meant that both her reactions and the speed of her strikes were far faster than any normal person, or realistically, even any gifted, could achieve. And there was a moment, a heartbeat, between the Elgoriat disappearing and its landing a blow. Stepping outside the flow of time meant that the creature had more time to react than anyone could hope to match, but it didn't make them immune to being hit. No different, presumably, from an augur. An augur might have Khan prepared to absorb an essence attack, too, but if Asha could wait until the last second, against an overconfident opponent... She set her feet. The Elgoriat was probably going to get in a lot more hits before she had any chance of success. Still, pain she could deal with. She motioned for Ellie to begin again. Asha breathed deeply of the sweet air as she moved through the forest, enjoying the way the vibrant pink-purple light of dawn colored the surrounding foliage. She paused briefly to examine a couple of the wards she had set along this path, giving a small, satisfied nod when she saw that they needed no strengthening today. This was her morning and evening ritual now, since Diara had shown herself. Performing this check, occasionally reinforcing or tweaking the wards, but mostly just reassuring herself that they were still in place. There were still 3 days until the Venerate's deadline, but Asha had no confidence that Diara would keep her word. She eyed a particularly dangerous ward as she passed, considering. She had spent an entire day setting these up in a solid perimeter around the crystalline palace, where Diara should be entering the Dokken. They were threaded throughout the woods and, she thought, very difficult to avoid setting off. Khan could dismantle them, of course, but Asha had gone to great lengths to hide any traces of visible essence. They were hardly the most sophisticated of traps, but with the power at Asha's disposal, it hopefully wouldn't matter. At best, they might hurt Diara. At worst, they should give Asha some measure of warning when the Venerate returned. She rolled her shoulder absently as she walked, though there was nothing physically wrong with it. Still, the memory of teeth sinking into it, again and again and again, made her twitch uncomfortably. Her training against the Elgoriat the day before had not gone as well as she had hoped, though she knew it was foolish to want better results after only a few hours. She was, now that she'd experienced failure time after excruciating time, beginning to see patterns she thought she could use.
the way the creature's muscles tensed usually indicated in which direction it was going. That meant she then knew roughly where to look for the slight, barely distinguishable blur against the horizon, sometimes backed up by suddenly indented dirt or spots of crushed grass along the creature's path. It all gave her the briefest of warnings for the likely direction of the assault upon her, and thus a rough approximation of where was best to attack. The trick, currently, was training herself, her mind, and her muscles to respond in that single moment. To see and react without needing to think in between. To make adapting to the time manipulation a reflex. She thought that perhaps she might be getting better, a little closer. She still hadn't stopped the Algori at a single time, though. She sighed. Even if she did manage to win against one of the unsettling creatures, she knew that Diara would be an entirely more difficult opponent. Not because she was better at manipulating time, according to Ellie. Algoriat were more adept at that than most of the Venerate, but because she was simply smarter than one of the Banes. If Asha didn't strike a maiming blow on the first attempt, it was doubtful she would get a second. Her thoughts drifted as she meandered through the next copse of trees, absently adjusting one of her wards as she did so to better conceal its presence. What Diara had shown her of Davian's current situation was weighing on her almost as much as his impending death. She kept replaying the scene in her mind, brief though it had been, and wondering what they had been making him do for the past year. Hoping that he was still all right, praying desperately that the decision she had made not to cooperate wouldn't bring him to any harm. Still, she did have that message from him, from what seemed like a lifetime ago. He was in Ilshan Gath Delteth, but they couldn't kill him. They couldn't kill him. Until now, she had always assumed that it was an exaggeration and that Davian had only said it to reassure her. She understood now why it was true. Asha was abruptly shaken from her introspection by a flash of yellow beyond the crystalline palace, refracted and distorted through the glittering lens, but too familiar to mistake. Essence. A distant, thundering roar reached her ears. She stood paralyzed for a moment. Then she began sprinting for the palace, heart suddenly pounding loud in her ears, all thoughts of Davian forgotten. One of her traps had been triggered. Diara had returned early. Chapter 14. Caden woke. For a few seconds he just lay there, confused, a deep ache in every part of his body. Something had happened. He'd been injured, badly. With an effort, he forced his eyes open. Alcathranin was around him once again, warm and bright. He was lying by a heat stone, which was staving off the chill and had helped dry his snow-sodden clothes. He frowned around in bemusement as memory started to return. He'd fought Alaris. Fooled him into that leap, the only way he could think of to get his friend through a gate. Physically forcing him would have been impossible, given the other man's strength. But Caden had crashed to the rocks below. How had he gotten back here? His heart lurched, and he tried to sit up. Had Alaris not gone through the gate? Had he somehow already figured out a way back from the wells? It was an irrational thought, but panic began welling up inside him nonetheless. His effort to sit up failed, and he winced instead, lying back and taking a steadying breath. He was sore, weak, but a quick check of his limbs revealed that he was without serious injury. The eternity he'd spent splayed on that rocky outcropping began to come back to him, and he knew he'd shattered bones and crushed organs in the landing. There was no way he could have had enough essence left to heal so quickly. That would have taken focus, time. And there had been that figure. "So, you are Tel'Kamar." Caden flinched at the unfamiliar voice. He turned his head to see a man standing off to the side. He was perhaps 40, wiry, and with a narrow face that seemed to emphasize the black veins that streaked prominently across it and beneath his beard.
"Who are you?"
Caden rasped, discovering his throat was as rough and sore as the rest of him.
The man studied him. I am Siner, he said, saying the name as if it should mean something.
Who?
Siner glared, clearly irritated, though the expression faded almost immediately.
I am an augur, he said calmly, and the one who saved you. You didn't save me. I would have recovered eventually.
Caden remembered the agonizing haze of his injuries.
But thank you, he added begrudgingly. You healed me?
Siner nodded.
I wasn't sure there was anything left to heal to begin with, he admitted with a visible shudder. I've never seen a still-living body so badly injured. I am by no means a squeamish man, but hell's name, it was unpleasant. Imagine how I felt.
Siner allowed himself a small smile at that.
Quiet.
Caden stared around at El Catherinen.
How did you get me here? And then get me back up here?
There was no easy path down from El Catherinen. Of that he was certain.
Are you able to make gates?
Siner produced two stones from his pocket, displaying them to Caden.
Not exactly, he conceded.
Where did you get those? Caden asked, trying to stop his muscles from tensing with suspicion. Then he squinted. They were similar in size and color to the travel stones he and Tayrus had used to transport themselves inside Tol Athion, what seemed like an age ago. But these were different. For one, each had a symbol inscribed upon it, a circle surrounding a man, woman, and child.
Nethgulla,
said Caden dourly, answering his own question.
Of course.
Siner sniffed, his lack of denial confirmation enough.
I tossed one down, then used the other to open a portal. I had to go outside the city, though. It didn't seem to work from in here. The one I threw down landed much further away from you than I would have liked, he added with a vaguely accusatory glare. It was quite a walk. I barely got us both back through before the portal shut.
Caden tried unsuccessfully to shift to a more comfortable position. That was a useful vessel to have. He would need to confiscate it from Siner before he left.
How did you find me in the first place?
His aches were easing as he continued to drain essence from the city around him. He propped himself up on one elbow, focusing.
I assume that you were not just passing through El Catherinen by happenstance.
The corners of Siner's mouth quirked upward.
No, I was looking for you. I've been looking for you for a while, actually, but this was the first time you were somewhere I've actually known how to get to.
Caden's eyes narrowed.
But how did you know I was here? He clarified. A trace.
Siner showed no embarrassment at the statement.
Eleavia gave it to me and told me to seek you out.
There was silence for a few seconds.
And how exactly did Nethgulla get my trace? Caden asked wearily.
She didn't have one before for this body when she was searching for me, and she didn't have the opportunity to take one at the wells or at Dylanus. He held Siner's gaze. You can call her by her true name now, too. Eleavia was my wife's name, and I will not have it used to refer to that monster. Siner's expression darkened.
Eleavia didn't say how she got the trace, he said, defiant. It is the name she prefers, and you're in no position to be giving orders, Talcamar.
Caden gave a tired sigh. He stepped outside of time. He was still weak, but his mind was clear enough to manipulate Khan. Everything around him slowed almost to a stop as he levered himself to his feet and limped over to stand in front of Siner, waiting patiently. To Caden's perception, it took the augur a good 10 seconds to react, his eyes inching wider as he realized that Caden was gone, and then his movements abruptly close to matching Caden's speed again. Caden drew more essence from the surrounding lines. Siner hadn't even thought to raise a disruption shield, so Caden simply infused his arm with the energy, He was demonstrating a point, not aiming to injure the man. He casually blocked a panicked strike from Siner, and then lashed out, grasping the auger by his shirt and walking forward, slamming the man upward against the nearby wall so that his feet dangled off the ground. He restrained a grimace as snow that had built up on the rooftop shook free at the impact. Siner's face went white. He might have done that a little harder than was strictly necessary.
"Careful, Tokimar," Siner gasped weakly. "Someone else is in the city."
Caden frowned. What he'd just done shouldn't have attracted any attention, but he was glad that Siner had mentioned it before he had decided to use essence externally.
"Thank you for saving me," he said calmly, his face only inches from Siner's.
He casually blocked another feeble attempt from Siner to attack him with Khan.
"But do not imagine for a second that it means you are stronger than me. The time for games or to debate who is in charge here is well past. So you can follow my instructions and answer my questions, or leave."
He released his hold on Siner's shirt.
"Your decision."
Siner stumbled as he slid back down the wall. The veneer of control he'd exuded up to that point vanished. He'd thought he was capable of competing, Caden realized with vaguely pitying amusement. Thought that, perhaps given Caden's weakened state, he would be able to hold his own in a fight. He knew the truth now, at least. Siner finally regained his footing, though he stared awkwardly to the side, face flushed.
"Who is here?" Caden continued calmly. "How many of them are there?"
"I don't know. I felt them using essence."
Siner waved his hand toward the center of the city.
"Somewhere that way."
Caden chewed his lip.
"Activate my trace," he said, suddenly uneasy.
It was almost certainly long enough since he'd used essence. Neither strengthening nor healing himself should have given him away, as the energy remained in his body rather than his using it as a focal point. But he wanted to be sure. Siner obediently drew a small polished marble sphere from his pocket, staring at it. He shook his head.
"Nothing." "Good. We should be safe enough here, then. It's a big city."
Caden released a breath he hadn't realized he was holding.
"Now, why were you sent to find me?"
"Nethgala wanted to give you a message."
Siner's tone held only faint traces of resentment at having to use the name.
"She has gone to Ilshan Gathdel-Teth to find Lycanius, to get it back for you. She will send word when..."
He trailed off as he watched Caden rubbing his face and nodding wearily.
"You knew?"
"Yes,"
said Caden in vague apology.
"Please, continue."
"How did you know?"
demanded Siner.
"Davian told me."
Caden waved away Siner's expression.
"It's a story for which I doubt we have the time."
He walked stiffly over to a low wall and sat heavily, drawing more essence from the city as he did so.
"Sit down, Siner," he said reluctantly, gesturing to the space beside him. "Tell me everything you know."
Caden largely let Siner do the talking for the next hour, only occasionally prodding for more information as he caught up on events from the past year. Much of the news from Ilin Ilan he already knew. The massive political divisions, the assemblies struggled to exert their power. Siner's frustration when he spoke of Weir in particular was clear, though given the lengths to which he and Nethgala had gone to put the prince in his current position, and Weir's subsequent refusal to use it to force Andara completely under his command, the augur's vexation was hardly surprising. Caden was at least glad that Siner's observations backed up his own impression that the young man had been handling himself well, even thriving, despite the circumstances. He was relieved to hear that Caroline was well, too. He'd already learned, during one of his cautious sojourns from Mor Arul, that the princess was overseeing relief efforts in the north. It had been easy enough to find out, as the assembly had taken to making her reports from there public, trying no doubt to stoke sentiment against the constant political unrest that plagued the city. That suited Caden just fine.
Siner had heard the most recent report, and Caroline apparently remained in good health. She was safe as she could be, so long as Caden didn't draw any more attention to her. He still worried for her, wished he could risk seeing her again, but for now, it was all he needed to know. There were other things, however, about which Caden had been entirely unaware. This was the first he had heard of Desriel's apparent preparations for war. That was almost certainly at the Venerate's prompting, though he had no idea why they had chosen this moment to urge the Gilshar to action. And while the additional rumor of a potential Neskian assault was unlikely to be connected, the Venerate had never bothered to foster much influence that far south. It was still a concern, and Dara's military simply couldn't stretch that thin. And then eventually, there was the other piece of news, the one Siner mentioned almost offhandedly and seemed about to move on from when Caden held up a hand, bringing the conversation to a halt. "What do you mean, the Sharteth were captured?" he asked. Siner hesitated. "It was months ago, though I only heard of it recently," he admitted. "My source is reliable, but the Toll are obviously very tight-lipped about it all. I haven't had the chance to verify whether it's true." "It would be a strange rumor to start if there wasn't something to it," Caden allowed grimly. "But it also doesn't make any sense. I broke Toll Athian's control over the creatures myself. There's no reason for them to have allowed themselves to be captured." Siner raised an eyebrow. "There are two augurs there now. It may not have been that simple." Caden's frown deepened. If the Sharteth truly were imprisoned, it changed everything. He had assumed, from the moment he'd escaped a year ago, that the Venerate would have assigned the Sharteth to tracking him down. Even with the Watcher dead and their base of operations beneath Tol Athian gone, they were still a serious threat. Every time he had been forced to use essence over the past year, he had all but fled the scene immediately afterward as a precaution. "Do you know what the Sharteth are?" he asked Siner. The augur shrugged. "Creatures from the Darklands. Like echoes, but with close to full control." "Like Nethgulla," said Caden quietly. "But worse. Nethgulla and even the echoes are denizens of the Darklands. They escaped from there. But they were not born there. The Sharteth are more like leaders in the Darklands. They're from the beginning. They are older than any of us, any of the Venerate. And when a Sharteth is made, they are chosen to cross into the waiting body." Siner cocked his head to the side. "How do you know this?" Caden's heart twisted as he forced himself to consider the question. The memory brought on by seeing Ordan's sever had been one of those that his mind had shied away from, but not because of what he'd seen. It was what had come after that he'd wanted to forget. His return to Ilshan Tereth Kal, he and Alchesh together convincing Ordan to let them leave with the sever in order for Caden to help the struggling Darisians raise the Ilshara. Ordan's locking of the forge, ensuring that it could never again be used, but dooming himself in the process. Alchesh's years-long battle with the being from the Darklands as it began seeping through his connections, learning from it at first, seeing more and more of the future, every time closer to the edge, but every time promising that he had it under control, promising that he could find out more about Davian, constantly convincing Caden to wait just a bit longer. And then Caden's blindness to the Sharteth finally wresting control. Alchesh's rapid descent into madness as the creature began giving him glimpses into the Darklands, until finally Caden, realizing the truth too late, tried to use the sever. The way it had taken such pleasure in killing Caden's friend while Caden was forced to watch. It had taken Caden years to fully grasp why the Sharteth had destroyed the body it had managed to take, sending itself back to the Darklands in the process. Years until the group of young men and women in Andara had started showing signs of being able to use Khan, and Caden had finally understood that Alchesh's connections to the Forge had been released upon his death.
each one breaking off, attaching to a new individual, making it even harder to close the rift.
"I just do," he finally said coldly. "The point is that the Shateth should never have been captured by the Andorans, even with augurs on their side. They are simply too smart and too careful."
Siner's brow furrowed.
"You sound afraid of them."
"I am."
Caden held Siner's gaze. "These creatures have knowledge, Siner. Far beyond anything in this world. Whatever dangers their abilities pose, they pale in comparison to that. When I released them from the Gifted, I added stipulations of my own, specifically that they were not to share knowledge beyond what was already known in the world. But that was years ago. The other Venerate have had plenty of time to realize my deception and try to undo it, and the weapons that those creatures know how to make could wipe us all out in a heartbeat." He gestured to the medallion around Siner's neck. "Speaking of vessels, how did you come to be in possession of that particular one?" Siner started, his hand moving to his neck on instinct and clasping the medallion protectively.
"This?" He gave an uncertain laugh. "It was a gift from from Nethgala."
"You know what it does?"
"I do."
Siner forced his hand away from the amulet again.
"It is for the end, when all the others are dead."
Caden nodded slowly. "It breaks your tie to the forge," he said, his stomach churning as flashes of memory returned. "You will no longer be able to use Khan, but you will not need to die in order for us to close the rift."
"Exactly."
Siner shuffled his feet, looking suddenly nervous. Caden was silent, immediately feeling a surge of pity for the man as a few pieces fell into place. Siner was working for Nethgala because she had told him that he could be saved. Even if he had convinced himself that it was for other reasons, there was no doubting his core motivation now. But Nethgala intended to give Caden the sever. It was so obvious that Caden almost wanted to laugh. She had only ever inserted herself into this conflict, violently manipulated the political and social landscape of an entire country, ruining the lives of thousands upon thousands of Andorans, because while she wanted the rift closed just as badly as Caden did, she was also desperate to stop him from killing himself. Because she knew his plan, and she was determined to force her alternative upon him. She wouldn't care about the cost, either. She never had. That thing had come through from the Darklands into his wife's body, taken Eliavia's memory of him, her love for him, and twisted it into something dark and fixated. And in all the years since that had happened, her pursuit, her belief that eventually he would end up with her, had never fallen anything short of obsession. That should have been obvious to Siner, too, by now. But whether his blindness was born of desperation or whether Nethgala had truly persuaded him, it didn't matter. She would discard him as soon as he was no longer useful. That was simply her nature. Caden considered the amulet. If he took it from Siner, then perhaps Davian could use it. But then he would die soon after, unable to draw essence from his surroundings, not to mention that Caden was fated to take his life anyway. There were others fighting for Andara who could use this, though, who were almost certainly more deserving than this man if he had been working for Nethgala. Still, if Caden took it, he would be necessitating Siner's death. He didn't like the man much from what he had seen thus far, but he wasn't sure he was quite at that point.
"Why haven't you used it yet?" he asked eventually.
Siner shrugged, still looking tense.
"There's no reason to until everyone else is dead. This way, I can still be of use."
His eyes searched Caden's.
"You have remembered much, then?"
"Almost everything." Caden left it at that. His memories had mostly returned, and yet, since he'd remembered killing Davian, the vivid ones, the ones he relived rather than simply recalled, had been rare. In fact, the memory he'd just seen of Alchesh had been one of only three over the past year. Instead, everything leaked back in a slow haze now. Sometimes he would simply have facts at his fingertips that he hadn't realized had returned until his mind needed to conjure them. He knew why, too. His mind was shying away from the trauma, or potential trauma, of experiencing those things all over again, of exposing him to the kind of man he had once been. He still wasn't sure if that was a good thing. A distant boom shattered the silence. Both men froze, then darted behind a low wall, looking toward the source of the noise. The sound had come from deep in the city, somewhere within the great haze of darkness caused by Isiliar's broken tributary. The noise echoed away into nothing, but there were no physical signs of anything untoward.
"What was that?" whispered Siner.
Caden shook his head, eyes still fixed on the darkness.
"Not sure."
It couldn't be coincidence that someone was here. So far as he knew, nobody except Nethgulla had come to Alcathranin in the 2 millennia of Isiliar's imprisonment. The city was a marvel, to be sure, but at the end of the day it was just a city. There were no hidden treasures to be found, no unique wonders from which to learn. He frowned to himself. When Siner had first mentioned the presence of others, Caden had assumed that it was someone reacting to his fight with Alaris, that his trace had activated, and one of the Venerate had come to look for clues to his whereabouts. Not ideal, but not especially dangerous, so long as he and Siner did nothing to attract their attention. This, though, this was something else. Whatever was going on, it didn't feel like a search.
"Are we safe here?"
Siner's tone was uncertain.
"As I said, it's a big city."
Caden kept his own concern from his voice. Even if whoever it was did wander in their direction, the essence flowing through Alcathranin should mask their presence from all but the most wary of passers-by. But if it did not, if somehow they were discovered by one of the Venerate, Caden was in no condition for a serious fight. Or flight, for that matter.
"But we shouldn't linger."
Siner indicated his agreement.
"So, you'll help Nethgulla?"
he asked, sounding cautiously optimistic.
"She only went to Ilshangeth-Delteth for you, you know,"
he added, seeing the hesitation in Caden's stance.
"She went there for her own purposes," Caden corrected him firmly.
"Nethgulla is as afraid of Shemaleth reaching the rift as you or I, but not because she fears the end of the world. It is because she doesn't want to live in the Darklands again. She simply doesn't want her time in this place, this paradise by comparison, to come to an end." "It doesn't matter why she is doing it," Siner pressed, somewhat nervously now. "Your goals are clearly aligned. She wants to help you retrieve Lycanius, and that is your sole purpose right now." He eyed Caden's tattered, bedraggled state. "Surely you need every ally you can get." Caden studied Siner.
"The old saying is wrong, you know," he said eventually. "A common enemy does not a friendship make. You can only ever be as good as the people you are willing to fight beside. And even ignoring her past, I am only in need of her help because she altered my plan for her own ends. She killed Asar, destroyed countless lives in Andara to introduce her binding vessel and make use of the siphon, and then thrust the responsibility of maintaining the Ilshara upon the shoulders of an innocent girl." He held the man's gaze steadily. "So, no. Alliances made from convenience only ever weaken a cause. I don't refuse Lycanius if she places it in my hand, but I am not going to join with her."
Siner paled. He gaped at Caden for the first time, looking completely lost. Caden gave him a tight smile, only partly sympathetic.
"You thought that I would be more pliable, more uncertain. You thought I would have enormous holes in my memory,
that I wouldn't entirely understand everything that's happening or who was a friend and who an enemy, whether I was doing what I'd planned to do or whether I was making a mess of things.
Caden watched the augur calmly.
I am clear now, Signer. Clearer than I have been in a very long time. I despise my past, but I have to learn from it, not wallow in its misery. My confusion, my desperation, is not something that you or Nethgala or anyone can take advantage of any more.
Signer sat heavily.
She said that you would save her, he muttered. I still might. I'm just not going to pretend that's my goal.
Caden leaned forward, lending his tone some urgency.
You want to help her? Make my job easier? I'm not going to work with her, but the faster I get to Ilshan Gathdel-Teth, the more likely she is to survive.
Signer looked up again.
How? Two things.
Caden drew in a breath.
The first is easy enough. Go to Alin Ilan and talk to the Shateth. Try to determine their purpose there. They delight in using Darisian, but they know and can use the common tongue if pressed.
He held Signer's gaze. When you have extracted all that you can, kill them. I don't know why those fools in Tol Athion are keeping them alive, but make certain they are dead before you leave.
Why me?
Because they might be bait for me, said Caden simply. The Venerate haven't attacked Ilin Alan directly yet, partly because they do not see Andara as much of a threat, but I think also because they believe I'll eventually try to contact my friends there. Add to that the Shateth's capture, and it's hard for me to stay away.
He spoke honestly. If Sina were not here, he wasn't sure that he could stop himself from trying to sneak into the Andaran camp.